Good morning and welcome to another edition of Weekend Magazine. We're going to one of our favorite destinations today, which is the New York State Museum up in Albany. And I'm going to be speaking with Catherine Weller, who is the Director of Education, and she sees the museum from all different angles, so she's going to give us some great information. Catherine, hello, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you?
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for coming on. The New York State Museum is such a, you know, it's such a gem, you know, in New York State. And I'm hoping everybody, we're down in the Hudson Valley, everybody takes a ride up and checks you guys out. But where should we start? You want to talk about where you're located, maybe? You're very easy to get to. And
oh, yes, definitely for anyone coming from the Hudson River Valley, it's very easy to reach us. We're located in Albany, New York. We're right on Madison Avenue. It's very easy to just take 787 and then able to get off of that. And we're really in the heart of Albany. We're part of the State Plaza Complex. So it's not just the museum. The Capitol is there, a beautiful, rich contemporary art collection. So there really is a lot to see if you come to visit us besides for just the museum.
Yeah, so that's the first Albany exit of the two exits, right? There's two Albany exits from the thruway.
Yes.
Okay, and then once you go around, is there an exit off of that?
From 787, you can take the Madison Avenue exit, and that will bring you, again, you just go straight up Madison Avenue, and the museum is on the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. Now, for most visitors visiting on the weekend, parking is free. The museum is also free. So if you come for a weekend trip, it's a great, inexpensive way to spend the day. It's wonderfully family-friendly. We have wonderful hands-on areas for younger visitors. All of our exhibits try to have educational elements. It's really a great experience for the whole family. Definitely a multi-generational place to visit.
Yeah, it's big too. It's huge.
It's huge. We have over 100,000 square feet just of exhibit space. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And even though we're located physically in Albany, because that's the capital of New York, the scope of our research and our collections and exhibits is easily across state. That is one of the big parts of our mission, is to really serve all of New York's residents as well as visitors to the state. And I'll be honest, the research of our scientists and historians really even spans beyond the bounds of New York State. It is amazing to see what our scientists and our historians are doing, all of that behind-the-scenes research, which, again, we really try to put on display in our exhibits.
Oh, yeah. When was the museum founded? It's fairly old, right?
It's very old. It's one of the oldest in the country. Our museum, actually, it is the oldest state museum in the country. I apologize. It was established in 1836.
Wow, that's old.
And that's pretty amazing. And not only was it wasn't just a museum, and that's something that I absolutely love, because ever since the 19th century, from 1836, it has been a museum, but also an active collection with scientists actively doing research. So many of our collections are spanning well into the 19th century. Some are over 150 years old themselves.
Wow.
So not only are the artifacts older and important in their own right, but also as collections pieces, they were being collected by curators and scientists back in the 19th century.
Wow, isn't that something? I know you've got a lot of Indian history and artifacts, right? And you do dioramas.
Oh, definitely. We have a beautiful exhibit, Native People of New York, which explores the development of human habitation in New York from right around the time of the Ice Age, right after the Pleistocene period, all the way through to the Contact period, looking at the Iroquois, looking at how different groups came to New York, and then what we know about them, their own nationalities, that they had established their own settlements. We also have a beautiful collection of contemporary Native American artwork. So continuing the story to today, Native people are still a very vibrant part of New York State's culture and history, and their contributions to the artwork is absolutely amazing, and that's an active collection that we are still adding to.
Wow. So you have different parts of the museum for allocated for different, like, gems and minerals, and what's the layout? What kind of areas are there?
Well, when you first enter the museum, and again, we have our lobby entrance is right off of Madison Avenue, so once you park, the entrance is right there. Normally, we recommend that visitors start on our western side of the museum, and that goes into what we call Adirondack Hall. And that looks at the natural history of the Adirondacks, provides a really nice introduction to the natural geological makeup of the state. We also have an exhibit there, Beneath the City, which I love. It really looks at how archaeology can tell the story, and this one is focused on Albany, but it looks at how we can tell what the society was like in Albany in the 18th century based on the archaeological remains that have been uncovered.
Oh, wow.
In that entrance, we also have one of our main temporary exhibit spaces. Right now, there's an exhibit there that I recommend everybody come to. It'll be open through Mother's Day this year, and that's Votes for Women.
Okay.
That exhibit opened up in November, and it celebrates the centennial of New York for women winning the right to vote in New York State. And that really started, was part of that trend of states finally saying that, yes, women deserve the right to vote. And in 1920, the country as a whole gave women the right to vote. But really, you saw states fighting for it and women fighting for it in their own states, kind of pushing it as they went along, starting out in the West and then coming, you know, New York was one of those states saying, this is something we want to give all of our citizens.
So like Seneca Falls, which is in New York State, you're kind of reflecting what went on there, and you know, it's nice because you're covering everything, you know, all kinds of aspects of the state. So
exactly. Seneca Falls is a huge part of that early story, and also the exhibit, it's not just about the suffrage movement, that's a huge part of it, mm-hmm. but it actually looks at women's rights past the suffrage movement, which is pretty amazing, because many people, we talk about women's right to vote, but we, you know, often you think the story ends in 1920, oh, women have the right, that's it. But it goes into the equal rights movement of the 1970s, okay. and even to today, all of the, it's an exhibit that I think for everybody, it's very relevant with everything that's been going on over the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
It really speaks to that continuing fight.
So that's all when you come in on the western side of...
That's just the entrance to the museum.
Just the entrance, okay, wow.
As you go through in Adirondack Hall, we do have a beautiful hall looking at minerals and geology in the state, and that's a great favorite. The exhibit itself is just beautiful. Pieces from throughout the state as well as beyond, giving an idea of what the makeup is through the state. As you go through the museum, we have Discovery Place, which is a wonderful hands-on area for younger audiences. We have a very friendly area for preschool-age children, as well as an area that's much larger for the whole family. And that really brings the research that's going on into a very accessible and fun element for those family settings. And that's something we see visitors who definitely make it a must-hit aspect of their one-time visit if they're just visiting the area, but also that's a favorite that we see people, families constantly coming to on a regular basis.
What kind of activities would you find like in a Discovery Place or the preschool part? What kind of things are you...
Well, our Discovery Place really uses the exhibits and the research as its starting point, and then it brings in that hands-on touchable element.
Okay.
So elements from our teaching collection, children can go in there and look at fossils, explore a mastodon tooth. So see, and I didn't even touch on that, but we have a large, the Cohoes mastodon, which was discovered just over 150 years ago. We have that on display, but obviously with that large-scale mastodon, children and visitors in general can't go up and physically touch it, but when you go into Discovery Place, you have the tooth. You can see the tooth in the mastodon or the Cohoes mastodon, but then you can actually up close and personal pick it up, look at it, see the difference between a mastodon tooth and a woolly mammoth tooth and a modern elephant. We also have a wonderful... This is one of the areas I'm very proud of. We have exploration stations, and what those are, our educational staff will bring out a portable exploration station, sometimes in Discovery Place, sometimes throughout the museum where it's most relevant, And so families can experience more of those teaching collection items. So if you're in Native People's Hall looking at the contemporary Native American artwork, some days we might have an exploration station out where you can actually see modern beaded pieces, reproductions, wow, or even artifacts from the period.
Nice. Oh, beaded pieces. Everybody loves the beading. That's a big thing. You have a diorama? Do you still have a diorama? They used to have a diorama with the Indians' longhouse.
Yes, that's all in Native People's Hall. And that explores, again, that explores human habitation of New York State from right about the time of the Ice Age, right at the end of the Ice Age, starting out with a beautiful diorama of a mastodon. It works very nicely with the Cohoes mastodon fossil because you see the fossilized skeletal structure of the mastodon. But then we have this diorama that shows a female mastodon with its child. And you can see the landscape that the mastodon were living in and see what they would have looked like. And then you continue in and you start to see how humans are interacting with their natural environment starting from about 10,000 years ago and going to right about at the pre-contact period, right before contact, mm-hmm, with the Iroquois.
Wow, that's something. Boy, this is great. There was the lady, I'm trying to think the name, Sonnenberg Garden in the middle of the state. The money from that family, I think, was linked to one of the credit cards, maybe MasterCard or one of the founders of it years ago. And I think that woman was very interested in these dioramas. And I think she was one of the original ones that was helping the museum way back, I guess it was in the 1800s, to set things up. I don't know if that's correct or not, but if it is, then that you have deep roots in some of these exhibits. And I guess the Museum of Natural History has similar dioramas. So that was a big thing with education back then. But
it's very popular. Yeah. We serve over 30,000 students a year,
wow,
at the New York State Museum. And one of our biggest draws, it's a big part of the New York State curriculum for social studies. And it's a great way. We actually have programming that uses the exhibits as a form of evidence. All of them are based on the archaeological finds of our scientists at the museum. All of them are based on places in New York State. So when you see it, you're really seeing a snapshot of what our archaeologists believe was going on based on the artifacts that they found.
Wow.
So for students, it's a great way of taking the story of Native people in New York State out of the textbooks and getting a better image of what we think their lives were like. We have a full-scale or part of a full-scale longhouse. Students can walk into that. See, we have a story being told by a grandmother figure based on Iroquois oral histories.
Uh-huh.
It's really a wonderful way of experiencing that history that it's very hard to see anywhere else. Unless you're able to go to a museum or a historic site, it's very hard to get that full immersive experience.
Yeah, I'm hoping some of our listeners, maybe they want to suggest to the school districts that their children go to take a trip up. Would the teachers at the local district make like a packet with information that would, coordinate with you? Or do you have things that are resources for a teacher that might want to be bringing a group up?
Oh, definitely. Our website is www.nysm.nysed.gov/education is our education page. And on that website, we have how to register for school group. All of our programming for schools is free.
Wow.
We want to make sure that our New York students or, anyone really can come and experience the educational purposes of the museum. So our programming is free. You can come for a full museum educator-led program where students get to experience, again, pieces from our teaching collection and do evidence-based, inquiry-based activities. Or you can come for a self-guided program. If a teacher wants to just use the museum, we also have resources, a place where students can unload safely and reload their buses, bathroom facilities devoted to students, lunchroom facilities.
Oh, wow.
All of those we have available free of charge. And we have on that website, we also have professional development for teachers. So access for teachers behind the scenes into our collections, work with our scientists and our historians, as well as working with our educators to see how they can bring our resources into the classroom or how they can come to the museum and use those resources.
Wow.
And finally, if that wasn't enough, we also really work hard to have teacher guides for all of our exhibits, especially for our exhibits that are coming in. We have right now, we have an educator's guide for A Spirit of Sacrifice, which is a beautiful exhibit that commemorates the centennial of World War I. And so resources for bringing some of our artifacts into the classroom, even if they're in a digital format. For Native Peoples Hall, we have an exhibit or a teacher's guide looking at a Mohawk Iroquois village. And that is something that we've heard from teachers they use on an annual basis.
Yeah, well, you've got different grade levels teaching different things. So you have, you're being able to target, you know, a whole continuum of student ages and curricula. That's really wonderful. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. We are part of the state education department. So everything we do, it ties back to our New York State standards. We work very hard to make sure, not just for social studies, but also looking at how can we bring in English language arts,
sure,
reading and writing? How can we bring in science and math? And creating a really nice package for classroom teachers where they can hit multiple disciplines with material really focused on the needs of their students.
Wow.
We also try to work with teachers as much as possible while we're doing the planning process. So while we're developing this, I have an amazing team of teachers that I reach out to and say, do you mind trying this out? How does this look? Do you think would this speak to your students? And then using their feedback to make sure that material is relevant for classroom teachers.
Oh boy, that sounds fantastic. All right, so let's continue the tour because while we're doing that, everybody can think in terms of school groups as well as bringing the family. So
yeah, so once you leave Native Peoples Hall, we go into our South Gallery area where the Cohoes Mastodon is. We also have changing exhibits in there. So right now, as I mentioned, we have a beautiful exhibit called A Spirit of Sacrifice that looks at New York State in World War I. We have a cutout of what the trench would have looked like, so you can actually walk in and get a feeling for what it would have been like in these trenches. We have an amazing collection from the New York State Library of propaganda posters.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of my favorite features of the exhibit, is you can see the propaganda material that was galvanizing New York residents to be part of the war effort, whether or not it was recruitment for soldiers to go abroad or here in the home front. Things from even posters for school children, getting them to have kind of an early version of the Victory Gardens that we see later on in World War II. So, so work for the war effort. We have a great picture of a boys' knitting club.
We think
of knitting as not something that, you know, young middle school teenage boys would be doing, but this was a knitting club where they're knitting socks, they're knitting special garments for soldiers at the on the right in the war in Europe.
Wow.
And fighting for, you know, so this is how you can help at home. We also just opened our exhibit celebrating the bicentennial of the Erie Canal.
Okay.
And that's Enterprising Waters. We will be opening, we opened just the first part of that. The second part will be opening in September. And that, again, great story. The Erie Canal really was so important to the development of New York as a state, the importance of New York State being the Empire State, and that really looks at the history, everything that led up to the opening of it, and then really what was the after effect? How did that change New York State and help open up the state in the 19th century?
Wow, fantastic. Okay, let's keep going. What else do you have over there?
We have Ice Ages, which is also a temporary exhibit that looks at the Ice Age period. And that takes small fossilized artifacts that have been discovered, and we had an artist create depictions of what these animals would have looked like. So the giant beaver, which, believe it or not, New York State had a beaver that was, I believe it was about 6 feet tall.
Wow. Isn't that
looks very different from what we think of. Giant sloth, of course, the mastodon. A great way, again, we talk about these animals, you hear about them, but an idea of seeing what the artifacts are that help tell us what they looked like and that they existed, and then an idea of what they actually looked like in real life.
I could see the whole family loving that. That's
oh my gosh, that opened up about this time last year, and it has been a very popular exhibit. We see families enjoying it. We've done programming surrounding it, and it's a wonderful thing that, yes, everybody in the family enjoys. Now, as you come around the museum, I haven't even mentioned Bird Hall, which looks at birds of New York State. And then we look at really New York metropolis, looking at New York City, looking at more of the urban side of New York. And that has a lot on immigration, a lot on all the diversity that came to New York. We also have a really heart-wrenching exhibit that focuses on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've seen as really not just an information-based exhibit, but something for visitors, especially people that remember that day, to come. And it's really, we've seen it as almost a healing aspect of that whole event. We see visitors who come and share their stories, people who really want to pay homage to what happened that day. And that really is the museum in a nutshell. It's hard to compartmentalize it into such a short, it really is a huge, very diverse exhibit or museum that focuses on history, science, and art with New York as its focus.
Now, what kind of art do you have? So you have actual halls, right, with art?
Okay. The art in the museum, really, it's both complementary to exhibits. Like, we will be opening up Art of the Erie Canal later on this year, and that will open April 28th. So we do exhibits that are very focused on art, but also mm-hmm. art really is that thread that goes through the whole history of New York, whether mm-hmm. or not it's someone in an Iroquoian society doing decorative work on a coil pot, mm-hmm. or it's a modern artist doing something that really celebrates New York as a state. You see it through the whole spectrum of the museum.
Oh, that's great. You used to do a flower show. I don't remember what time of the year it was. Do you still do that, or...?
We actually have discontinued that program. It ran for 25 years. New York in Bloom was a great program. Uh-huh. But we're also really trying to focus on mission-based programming, and we have some amazing programs coming up both this month and February mm-hmm. that celebrate the research going on in New York State. A perfect example is this weekend we have one of my favorite programs. It's Great Places and Spaces, and that'll be this Saturday, January 13th from noon until 4, again, free and open to the public. We have over 20 participating organizations from throughout New York State, historic sites, natural sites, cultural sites, and visitors can come and really get an idea of what's going on throughout the whole state in one visit to the museum. Mm. There will be hands-on activities. They can learn about the different sites, know what programming is going on, and then we also have our own program celebrating the exhibits that I just mentioned.
Okay. And that's when? That's an ongoing thing, or that's...
That'll just be this Saturday from noon until 4.
Okay.
And along with that, the programming that we have a great program coming up next Saturday that will focus on World War One.
Okay.
And that's Love Be, the Letters of Lieutenant Basil Bebe Elmer. This will be a dramatic reading where we have an actor actually reading the letters, and they're amazing. They're observations of what was going on at the front lines. And then our senior historian, Aaron Noble, who was the curator for the exhibit, he'll give some historical background. So that's a really unique experience that you can't get anywhere else, and that'll be next Saturday at 1 p.m.
So that's the 20th.
The 20th, yes.
Okay, good. That's great. Well, this sounds like there's so much to do, and people can go back different times of the year and, you know, do different things. That's wonderful. Now, we're running out of time. Let's give that website again. And, we got about 3 minutes. We'll give the website again, contact information. If somebody wants to bring a bus group, you know, how's the best way to contact you? Because you have to schedule that in advance, I would assume, right?
It works best. We do have drop-in visitation. But, again, our general website is www.nysm.nysed.com. gov. And when you go to our homepage, you can click on education. And on education, if you scroll down, you'll see the four educators and group visits. If you click on group visits, we have all of our contact information, as well as you can actually register online. But we also have contact information if you'd like to talk to a person, ask questions. Can I do this with my group? Can mm-hmm. I do that? Where is the best place to eat if I don't want my students to bring their lunch? Mm-hmm. Just about anything you could want. We do have that personal touch.
And what about senior groups? Now, that's a different kind of bus group where people, you know, travel.
It's
groups.
Actually that same website. That's okay. Our group visit, so we can accommodate everything on that page. We have wonderful staff members who can answer questions. Again, if you have a senior group, what is the best time to come? Are there facilities? Where is there for us to be able to stay? Do we have handicap accessibility? All of those questions to really personalize your visit and make sure that your group, whether it's a school group or just a regular group, has everything, all of their needs met.
Wow, fantastic. Well, Catherine, I can't thank you enough for coming on and bringing us up to date. Keep us posted as things come up, and maybe we can have you on again during the summer, or you know, see what's coming up for the end of the year. You can, you know, contact me easily through the emails that you have.
Excellent. It's my pleasure, and thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Well, that's a wrap for this week. I hope you take advantage of the opportunities that are abounding in the Hudson Valley. Take care. Bye-bye.